Dr. Bede Harris is a constitutional law expert at Charles Sturt University. Bede, great to talk to you this morning. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Now, from a constitutional point of view, what is the role that state governments play?
Well, state governments exist because of the historical circumstances that existed when Australia was formed. And none of the then colonies wanted to give up all their power to a central government. And so we ended up with a federal constitution with some power to make laws given to the Commonwealth Parliament and the rest left to the states. So it was not really a decision based on efficiency or principle. It was based on political self-interest.
So is it still valid in this day and age?
Well, speaking for myself, I don't think that federalism is a necessary form of government. It's when you consider the fact that Australia's population of 22 million is similar to that of some large cities, and yet we have three levels of government. We're over-governed, and there are too many politicians, and we simply don't need federalism if you're looking at it from the perspective of efficiency of government.
Now, this was probably the biggest point that was made yesterday by the former member for Riverina, Kay Hull, that efficiency really doesn't play into it when we're talking about the way money moves from the federal sphere through the state sphere and into local government. There's a lot lost, almost seepage, if you like, in the funding stream. So how big a problem is that?
Well, the last survey of the economic impact of federalism was done by Access Economics in 2006, and they said then that federalism costs the Australian economy about $20 billion a year. And some of that is through, the need to administer funds at three different levels of government. But a lot of it is the expense involved in determining which level of government is responsible for what. Because bear in mind that every time the Commonwealth wants to do something or a state wants to do something, the question arises, well, does this lie within the competence of your particular level of government? And that can involve the government itself spending resources and time on determining that question. And if it doesn't, then you end up having to have negotiations between different levels of government. It's all appallingly complex for a country with a population that's less than Mexico City.
Now, obviously, the taxpayer is the biggest loser here, but removing that from the discussion, would local government then be the biggest loser?
Biggest loser from what?
With the funds you've just mentioned there, this massive amount of money that goes through these negotiations and consultancies.
Yes, well, I think one of the problems that some people have flagged is that, the Constitution at the moment doesn't allow the Commonwealth government to make grants directly to local governments. Section 96 of the Constitution says that the Commonwealth government may make grants of money to the states. Now, it can make those grants conditional on the states then passing it on to local government. But I think that the problem that people were talking about yesterday was that, well, it has to go through that intermediate level.
But I know you mentioned there the Section 96, and the argument that says, look, we've got a precedent here is the Roads to Recovery money, that was done directly to local government. It didn't have anything to do with the state. So we've done this before.
Yes. I think, the same thing applies in relation to Commonwealth grants to schools. On the surface, it may appear that the money is being paid to religious schools, and on the surface, it may appear that the recovery money is paid to the local authorities. But in reality, the grant is being made to the state, conditional on the state passing the money on.
Right. So whilst it appeared that it was direct to local government, the behind-the-scenes paperwork that we didn't get to see still had it adhering to that important Section 96. What would it take, Bede, to fix things at the constitutional level? And I don't want to talk about referendums and things like that. This is about, from a legal perspective, how much tweaking would be required to make things a little more streamlined?
Well, it would take quite a lot of amendment to the Constitution. I mean, federalism is shot right through the Constitution. But if we were to change the Constitution to have a single national Australian government and leave state loyalties to the sports field, which is where I think they belong, then we would have a national government that was responsible for everything and administered everything. Of course, we would have to have a referendum on that point, but I think although Australian voters are very reluctant usually to debate constitutional reform, this is one area where there is a degree of support. I know that Griffith University did a survey on the question of attitudes to federalism, and nearly 40% of people, even without any background debate, were happy for the states to be abolished and for there to be a single national government.
Is there a flaw in some of this discussion that a lot of individuals want the state governments abolished because of the politics rather than the governance issue, that there are some state governments they'd like to be rid of, other state governments people really don't care, that it really depends on the political flavour and how that works with you as an individual, and that's not the reason to be talking about axing the states?
Yeah, it's difficult to, I suppose, disentangle why people are adopting that stance, and I agree with you. It's not how any particular state that's governed is the issue. It's whether we need states as institutions, and the short answer is that we don't. It's an unnecessary additional level of government that's completely redundant.
What would we have in its place to make sure that things worked smoothly? And I'll give you an example here. Some years ago, there was a lot of discussion about regional economic zones. Would we have to look at adopting something like that to make sure that we didn't have a one-size-fits-all approach to funding local government across Australia, recognising that certain regions do have different needs, different demographics than other regions?
Yes, well, I think this isn't a problem that's unique to Australia. Of course, every country in the world has to determine economic priorities and payment priorities depending upon the needs of particular regions, and how formalised you want to be in giving money to regions, or how large or small you want your local government entities to be. You know, there are many, many different ways of doing that. So that isn't really a problem in devising how to administer a national government and local authorities.
Is it as simple as giving constitutional recognition to local government? And I think New South Wales, we've already had Premier Barry O'Farrell and Attorney General Greg Smith mention that they're happy to do symbolic recognition but not financial recognition. And, of course, that's the clinch here. If we did go down the track of getting appropriate constitutional recognition for local government, could we suffer along with the states for a while longer?
No, I think that, you know, that point about whether the Commonwealth can grant money to the state, to local government directly, is actually not the main point. I can understand from the perspective of state governments, from a local government perspective, their minds might be put at ease if that was put into the Constitution. But that doesn't address the fundamental redundancy of having the second tier of government with that $20 billion a year cost to the economy. You know, if you're an electrician and you move from New South Wales to Victoria, you've got to re-register. You've got to re-register your car. It's just a colossal waste of money, which only thoroughgoing constitutional reform can address.
My last question for you is about the will to change, and you've already mentioned Australians and how we tend to work when we have a referendum put in front of us. Would we ever see politicians brave enough to frame this in such a way that we don't have a convoluted question to answer, that it's a very simple question, that people are well informed about consequences of their vote, and that politicians would be brave enough to seriously put this on the table?
Well, I think that at the end of the day, you have to find, and this may be a rare species, a politician who's not self-interested.
Oh, well, I think there's an oxymoron there, isn't there? You've got a not self-interested politician?
Yeah, who is willing to put this forward and a sufficient degree of constitutional engagement and interest by people in listening to the arguments dispassionately. You know, one of the problems is, and this goes back to another interest of mine, that even at school level, our civics education tells us what the Constitution is very well, but it doesn't tell us how it could be improved. And people grow up thinking that the Constitution is too difficult to change, or it's the best that it is. And I think there needs to be a shift in mindset of people to visualize how the future could be better. There would be a colossal campaign against this, of course, by state politicians. But I think, you know, the argument is there to be made and is there to be won.
Dr. Bede Harris, it's been really good to talk to you this morning. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.